This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hi, this is John. This week we have an interview with
Laurent Bunion.
I caught up with him at PDC and we talked about Silverlight, WPF, and his new wildly popular book, Silverlight 2 Unleashed. Here we go.
Start by introducing yourself.
Sure. So my name is Laurent Bunion. I'm a Swiss guy. I'm living in the region of Zurich, so I'm born on the French-speaking side, actually. So my mother tongue is French, but I moved to Zurich a very long time ago, like 13 years ago. And I currently work for a division of Siemens, which is called Siemens Building Technologies, and we are making a building automation system for, you know, hotels, big convention centers like the LACC, for example, and stuff like that. And more precisely, I'm in charge of what they call the management station there. So this is a software which is used to control a building.
Okay.
And you can, you know, with that kind of software, gather all the events coming from the building, control, you know, room temperatures, prepare some schedules for, like, if you know that the convention is coming, then maybe you want to, you know, start cooling the air a little bit, etc. And I have to say, I was so happy to see the keynote at PDC, right? Because
right,
that's where we are.
They did that demo that was kind of similar.
Oh, yeah. And it was exactly basically what I'm working on. Like, this kind of visualization software is very interesting for us, too. And I was really pleased twice at the keynote because they mentioned Switzerland a lot. And that's my hometown. So the technical university, the guy was mentioning this EPFL, mm-hmm. is basically in my hometown, so
oh,
where
okay.
I'm born. Yeah, so I like that. I didn't study there, but I know exactly where it is. So yeah, so that's me, and I'm going to be working at Siemens for another month, and end of December I'm moving on to IdentityMine, which is well known in the field, WPF, Silverlight, and you know now Windows 7 or so. We start working with that. Basically, it's a user experience company, mm-hmm. which has, you know, developers and designers in the same room. So it's pretty interesting because, I mean, it's quite rare to have, you know, firms where you have really developers and designers sitting together and working together.
Right.
So it kind of facilitates the workflows. And we've been working with them for quite some time, and I've made great friends there. So I'm pretty excited to join them. And the firm is located in, you know, in Tacoma, mm-hmm. And now Seattle, but now we are really starting European operations, so I will be the first employee in that setting.
You'll stay?
I stay in Zurich.
Oh, great.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was pretty much my condition because I like it there. And we'll build a small office there and, you know, see how it goes and maybe expand.
So how did you get started in WPF and Silverlight?
WPF is it's quite of a long story. We have a new project at Siemens that I'm currently working on, and this is really our next generation software. And you know, project at Siemens take a very long time to come because usually they are huge, and we mm-hmm. do that really in a global way. So this one is no exception. And in 2006, I was asked by my firm to go to Mix.
Okay.
Basically, before that, I've been doing a lot of ASP.NET, especially a lot of client ASP.NET. So really, you know, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, rendered by ASP.NET control. So I'm pretty excited about the ASP.NET MVC now because it's pretty much what I was doing at
right,
the time,
right.
Except that I was like cheating.
Yeah.
So a lot of custom controls, you know, like spitting HTML. And back then, we did a lot of, you know, JavaScript, Ajax, and it was, you know, a long time ago, so we had no framework at all. I think Prototype was starting, but they had only UI stuff at the time, I think. And Ajax was really not that big yet. So we had to write quite a lot of client-side APIs in JavaScript to communicate to web services, and that was my job. So I did a lot of that. And also coaching the, you know, the people in HTML, in CSS. We had, my team didn't have that much experience, but, you know, I had experience from private
right.
projects that I was doing at the time. So we kind of used that experience. And then Mix came and, you know, it's it was the first edition of Mix, and it's kind of the web type conference, you know. So my friend sent me there and I discovered WPF. I have to say I had not heard of WPF before 2006.
Okay.
Before Mix. And since I was starting to work on that big project that I was mentioning before, we thought that's absolutely what we want. And the reason, I mean, there are always multiple reasons why you choose a technology. And we did do a really correct evaluation of different variants, like, you know, Java or, you know, do a classic WinForms application plus ASP.NET for the web, these kind of things. But we had quite a lot of requirements for very rich graphics, very rich animation system, a very beautiful user experience for that product, for that new product. And as I said, projects at Siemens typically, especially projects like that, last quite a lot of years. So we had to plan for the future and we had to know that, okay, when we are going to release that product, it has to look beautiful for the time. So we have to choose a really leading edge technology.
Right.
And we spent, you know, like 6 months maybe doing some prototyping and really advanced prototyping. We have a few very special requirements, like this deploying our application as an MSI, so as a standalone application, but also as an XBAP with the same code base or as much as the same code base as possible. So we did a lot of that. We in the same time, we started collaborating with Microsoft quite strongly about that and also bringing our requirements. So back then, WPF was still in CTP. Mm-hmm. So we had the occasion to really influence the way they are doing. And, you know, when Siemens coughs, Microsoft has a big call because we are actually the biggest .NET developer worldwide. So, it's huge.
Okay.
It's huge. So we
How many developers are
I'm not sure how many developers. I know they have 400,000 employees, but that's all together, you know. But .NET developer, I never found the number, but I just know it's the biggest. That's all I know. So basically, we have a very strong relationship going on from developer to developer, and we have really the occasion. We have some channels to really give feedback directly to the product groups. And that's pretty much how it started. At the same time, I started blogging about it. I had not been blogging before, so I was quite active in the community already, but mostly in the JavaScript community, and there is a little bit less strong sense of community for JavaScript, or at least at the time.
Right.
So we were mostly doing, news group things. So in 2006, I started blogging about my experiences with ASP.NET and then quite fast with WPF, and I got the MVP after that. So that was a, you know, good surprise.
Right.
I was not expecting it at all, so it was really nice. I still don't know who nominated me, by the way. So if you listen to that and you want to say hello, I really don't know, actually. But, one day I got the email. So that was great. And, we started developing that thing. And already back then, so in 2007, they talked about WPFE for the first time at Mix.
Yes.
But we had had some hints already before that it was coming. So we, more or less knew what was coming on to us. And we always had in the back of our heads the idea that at one point or the other, we are going to have, to have a lightweight web offering for multiple platforms. Mm-hmm. So I started looking into that as soon as it came out, basically playing with the first versions. And so that's how it grew.
Now, so I know some people are coming into, and probably more these days, are coming into it by learning Silverlight first and then WPF.
Right.
And you kind of, you took the opposite
totally.
Where you learned WPF first.
For historical reasons, basically, yeah.
Was it frustrating? Like, I know when I talk to a lot of people that know WPF and then come into Silverlight, they're frustrated by a lot of the things that they're expecting that are missing.
Yep.
Did you find that?
No, I didn't have that experience because I was prepared for that. So I knew exactly what was coming to me, and I knew exactly that, WPF is so rich that it's impossible, to have all of that in Silverlight. And I mean, I'm really a web guy. So, before that, I've been doing also some rich desktop development in, WinForms and Java before that and et cetera. But I'm not afraid of small frameworks. I've been doing a lot of MBD development. That's how I started programming, actually. So I had like 52Ks of memory for a whole, room controller devices.
Right.
And it was pretty cool. So it's kind of back to the roots.
Right.
So, no, I found it, I'm working a lot with Microsoft and giving a lot of feedback to them through various channels, on how to increase compatibility between WPF and Silverlight, which I find is a must. I mean, I find it's a must that WPF is really a clean superset of Silverlight. I want to be able to take my Silverlight application and in as few steps as possible to port it to WPF, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm not afraid of the missing APIs, basically. It's a matter of really getting the good documentation and working on that.
Did you do a lot with starting with Silverlight 1.0 and then Silverlight 1.1?
Yeah, I did that. Since I'm a, as I said before, I'm
oh, right.
I'm a JavaScript guy, you know, so I really like that. So with Silverlight 1.0, my goal was pretty much to see, though I knew that, you know, this would be obsolete quite fast, but I played with that quite a lot. I wanted to see, you know, how you can control objects and maybe make a clean JavaScript object model to, you know, to instantiate your application, etc. So, yeah, I played with that quite a lot, actually. It was big fun, yeah.
So while we're talking about Silverlight and WPF, what are some of the major differences between the two?
So, yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind when we mention the differences is that obviously the Silverlight runtime is so much smaller than the WPF runtime. So if we compare, I mean, there is a like a client profile that you can download now for client.NET applications, and that's something like 25 megabytes, and the Silverlight runtime is like 5 megabytes. So what they did to do that, they took the core assemblies of .NET, and they removed as much stuff as possible.
Right.
Actually, I suspect they went the other way around. They started with zero and added stuff, but you know, it doesn't matter. So yeah, what you find very often is that you if you program in WPF, you use a specific overload of a method, and then you change to Silverlight, and then you notice that oh, that particular overload, the object is here, but that particular overload of the method is not there. For example, the constructor is not here. So they do all that to save space, basically. So, of course, you need to read the documentation. You need to find out, okay, what is existing, what is missing. And that's one thing. Another thing which is missing is the whole 3D story and the whole document presentation story. So WPF has a great story of presenting document with flow documents, with some beautiful, when you have big windows, you have like four columns, and then you squeeze it to just a very small window, and then you have one column, and it adjusts the layout automatically. It can resize the pictures automatically.
People are probably used to that from like the New York Times Reader application.
Yeah, exactly. The PI in Seattle, what is it called? The Post Intelligencer, I think, something like that. They
yes.
have a reader also. So that's, you know, that's beautiful, but that's not in Silverlight, at least not yet, right? So there is a story here which is missing. 3D is a big story. I mean, in WPF, you can do crazy things with 3D, and even more now with Direct 3D, so you can really do pretty much anything you want.
Right.
And that's all gone from Silverlight for the moment to save space. And
I'm sure partly, too, just because of the differences in platforms, right? Because
totally,
you don't
yeah.
even have DirectX on Mac. Or
that's one thing. You don't even have, the whole hardware acceleration is not there in Silverlight at all. So you render in software.
Right.
And it's still pretty fast, you know. I mentioned before, like 1,000 times faster than JavaScript. But still, I mean, if you want to do like a crazy shaders effect, like we saw before at PDC, you know, there was this session David Teitelbaum was showing some amazing effects. I put like three pictures on my blog of the screen. I just took pictures of the screen, and it was pretty amazing. So he was taking a webcam output and, you know, live running every pixel goes through a shader, so called pixel shader, which is a mini program, you know, running
right.
the GPU, like heavily parallelized. And it basically was modifying the aspect of the webcam live, you know, and it was pretty cool, actually. So all that is not in Silverlight because we cannot access the GPU in Silverlight. We are not even sure that there is a GPU. There will be one, but we are not sure which one.
Right, right.
And yeah, the whole hardware acceleration story is not there. And as you said, the reason is pretty simple. It runs on so many platforms that you really don't know what you're going to get. So, you know, there is a story of convergence going on for sure. So when Silverlight was released the first time, the incompatibilities were huge, in the sense that, I mean, Silverlight 1.0, even the application model is totally different. That's, you know, JavaScript as a programming language, and you had like text block, I think, was the control that you had.
Right.
And the rest was all rectangles and
canvas.
And ellipses, yeah. And canvas, yeah. Yeah. And then it grew to, okay, .NET with the same application model, which is really something that I was striving for. So you have your global app object with the main method, you know, the famous main method of every .NET application is there.
Right.
And it's there in Silverlight and in WPF. So for somebody who comes, even if you have to rewrite some stuff, the concepts are the same. That's really what was mattering the most to me.
Right, it's not a rewrite, it's a minor adjustment.
You have to adjust, you might have to rewrite some things, but at least the concepts are the same. Mm-hmm. So, and we are in Los Angeles. So,
yes.
Yeah, by the way. So that's one thing. Also, of course, the whole security issue is also a difference between a standalone WPF application and a partial trust Silverlight. So Silverlight is heavily sandboxed.
Right.
You cannot do any disk I/O. You cannot access devices like USB devices, etc. at the moment. I think they might very well come in the future version with a story of that, so allowing you to, for example, read images directly from a USB stick and upload them to, you know, to Flickr or something like that. But right. In the moment, it's not possible. You can read images on a disk, though. So if you have a file open dialog, basically,
right.
Which allows the user to select multiple files and do a multiple file upload, for example.
But never directly, right? Always
no,
through.
Not,
you only can pop up that dialog and then
right.
They do.
That's right. Yeah, and that's an obvious security
sure.
measure, right? And we all know that Microsoft has been burnt a lot
yeah.
security in the past. So we cannot really blame them for that. I think it's understandable. So yeah, there is something here. And so yeah, we were talking about this kind of hack that
sure.
exists, right, to kind of allow disk access, etc. And I was mentioning that I was working in April this year. I did a small kind of proof of concept of an offline Silverlight application, which is something that people have been wanting a lot, you know.
Right.
And something that Scott Guthrie mentioned for the first time in the keynote on Tuesday at
He
BBC.
Kind of mentioned it in a very vague way, and everyone kind of wonders what he's...
And the very funny thing is that people are really starting... I heard somebody tell me that Scott Guthrie demoed offline Silverlight application at the keynote, and then I told him he didn't show it, he mentioned it. Are you sure? I think I saw it on the screen. Then I said, it's impossible, he didn't, you know?
Yeah.
So people are really fantasizing, you know, about that. So that's really funny. So yeah, and what I did was just take a so-called HTA, so that's an HTML application, which is a feature that Windows have and many people don't know about it. Instead of, you know, you take just a standard HTML file, including JavaScript and CSS, and instead of naming it .html, you name it .hta, and then you double-click on it, and it runs in full trust. So the JavaScript has access to, through ActiveX, obviously, right? So it's a IE model. It has access to the disk, for example, and can do some file I/O
right.
and things like that. And so since Silverlight can access JavaScript, there is a good bridge there. I was able basically to read and write files from my Silverlight application through a JavaScript API to the disk. So that was kind of a goofy hack.
Right, right.
But it was interesting, and I got, you know, a lot of feedback about that. So I think there is a story going on there.
So why exactly would people want to run Silverlight, you know, in an offline mode out of the browser? I've had people say, like, well, what's the point?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the first time I showed my prototype to some Microsoft people, the reaction I often had was, but why? They didn't quite see why, some people. And some other people immediately see why. And I've been thinking a lot about that and talking to people. I think there are multiple stories here. One thing which is attractive into that, and it would be kind of a precondition for this to be really accepted by the public, is you know, having .NET on multiple platforms,
right?
Basically,
right.
And I think in that case, what we would need to have is really to have a full trust story going on. So not AIR. I'm not talking about AIR in Silverlight. Okay,
mm-hmm.
AIR is really connected applications. It's cool, but you know, you really, I mean, basically, you don't have a huge advantage running an AIR application or running a Flash embedded into the browser type of application, right? Mm-hmm. They have to talk with their servers, they cannot really save stuff, etc. So it's not really what I was looking for, but I think the advantage of having .NET, you know, offline .NET with full trust on a Mac is pretty obvious, right? Yeah. So that's one scenario which is interesting. Another thing is, you know, it's a 5 megabyte install, mm-hmm. so it's pretty fast. Scott Guthrie says 10 seconds and
yeah,
no reboot. So cool. You know, on my machine, it was rather like 12 seconds. Maybe. I mean, you know, whatever. It's really short and no reboot. And sometimes you don't even need to reboot the browser, I think. So it's quite nice. So that's really an advantage to say, okay, if I want to have a reduced application and I don't want to install not even the client profile, the 25 megabytes client profile for WPF.
Yes.
Then you can do that, and you can do already quite fancy things. So yeah, that's what I had in mind. And you know, if you can get rid of the whole Chrome of the browser, so it's pretty nice also.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so talking about WPF and Silverlight, what's the what's been your experience, and what are your thoughts on developing across both of those? Like, is there a story for leveraging, you know, a group of developers that are developing an application that mm-hmm. runs in both Silverlight and WPF?
Yeah, so for the moment, the story is really about sharing skills and concepts, I think. Ian Ellison-Taylor, I'm not sure what his title exactly is, but something like general manager for WPF. You know, he made a session at PDC about basically creating the same application in Silverlight and in WPF.
Sure. And Scott Hanselman, by the way, in his Baby Smash thing, mm-hmm. he showed WPF and then said, here it is in Silverlight.
Oh, that's cool. Fun. I wasn't aware of that. But yeah, I need to check his session for sure. So there is a story going on, but so far it's kind of a hack. You have, you know, you don't have Visual State Manager built in WPF, and it is in Silverlight, so you need to kind of import an external assembly. I mean, it works, but it's kind of a hack, and obviously you have to be a little bit careful what you use and whatnot, right?
Right.
So you have to be aware in advance of really the differences, etc. But where I really see more value, I have to say, if you have really a clean model for your application with, you know, a nice business object layer, on top of that, I'm a big fan of the so-called MVVM pattern, which is model view model pattern. So the idea there is that you have your model, and you abstract the model with an additional layer, which is called view model. And this view model is really prepared for binding, for data binding.
Okay.
And you put really as much as your UI behavior and state into this view model. It's you know, it's .NET objects, which means that you can serialize them very easily. And they support in a very elegant way by implementing an interface, basically, and raising an event when something changes. They support data binding.
Okay.
So the WPF and Silverlight data binding.
So that way you can keep your model pure, and it's reflects your data, or reflects your entities, and then your view model translates between those layers so that your view can data bind or can call into those interfaces.
Exactly, yeah. And if you push that far enough, you can have a view which is really as thin as possible. And it goes so far that in the current version of Silverlight and of WPF, you need a couple of event handlers. And in WPF, you have even the common model, so you don't even need event handlers anymore. So maybe you even have a code behind file which is basically empty. So you call initialize component to, you know, parse your example,
right.
That's it.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting model. And this exists in Silverlight as well. And it has, we could talk like hours about that because it has so many advantages. It plays extremely well with Blend. I talked about that with John Gossman. He's one of the architects on Blend and on the WPF framework.
Uh-huh.
And basically, he wrote about the model view model pattern.
Okay.
I think he might be the one who coined the term. I'm not quite sure. And he told me that it was basically developed specifically for Blend, because what it allows is Blend can run the code, can run the view model, and can display data at design time. So that the designer has, if you have a a list box with
right.
a couple of data with data at runtime, and those data come from a service somewhere. When you edit, you know, the UI in Blend, you won't see the data, so that's a problem.
Right.
And
that's one of the biggest problems, really, in developing in Blend. I think is, I mean,
well, it's. I think it's if you do it right, it's
right.
one of the biggest features of WPF and developing in Blend and designing in Blend is that you can see your data, but you just
sure.
have to do it in a way which is, you know, which is where the Blend takes advantage of this view model pattern. So what you do basically is Blend is able to detect if, or rather, let's say, WPF is able to detect if it's running in Blend on the design surface or in Cider in Visual Studio,
mm-hmm.
or if it's running really in runtime. So basically, you have a switch, and you can say, okay, now I'm running in design mode, and I want to instantiate data, and you can have a developer, you know, creating a few dummy data. And by using this kind of model, what I like to do is add an additional switch which says, okay, I want to run my application not in Blend, but I still want to see the design time data just to test my UI behavior.
Sure.
I wrote quite a lot about that on my blog, so if people are interested, there are some demo applications that you can download. So I did a nice application where you can add folders, you can add files to a folder, and then they will be displayed in your application. And what happens if you want to have suddenly 1 million files?
Oh, right.
And you don't want to, you know, copy-paste 1 million files. So you just say, okay, just add 1 million objects, 1 million instance of my view model object representing a file,
mm-hmm.
and the UI will be updated, and then you can scroll up and down, see if a UI virtualization is working, etc.
Okay.
So it has really a lot of advantage. And so test mode, what I just said,
mm-hmm.
runtime mode, then okay, it's clear, it's just, you know, connecting to a service, or in my small demo application it connects to a file system watcher, so that's a small object which gives some events every time that the file changes, so you can see what happens. And then the design mode means that when the developer opens that application in the design surface, he sees a number of files. Depending on the extension of the file, he will see a different icon, so he can really say... So basically, Blend is not just a designer, it's really running your application. And the coolest thing I ever saw, and I use that all the time, is that from Visual Studio, you can attach a debugger to Blend. And since Blend is a WPF application, and it's running your application into the app domain, you can connect your debugger, and you can debug your UI as it is rendered.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great application of the MVVM pattern. So it's very interesting. It's kind of... I was talking on Twitter with Glenn Block about that the other day, and it was kind of funny because, you know, Twitter is very limiting with 140
right,
characters
exactly.
per message.
Sometimes it helps make your conversation very focused, and other times it makes conversations completely random.
Yeah, in that case it was pretty cool, and Glenn was arguing that MVVM is actually an application of MVC, of Model View Controller. I can see that, though. I usually what I say when I do a presentation about that, I say that really the dependency property system which is available in Blend, in WPF and in Silverlight is really pretty much the controller, if
right.
you like. So it's
right.
kind of built in the framework, and you don't really have to worry about that. But if you want to take advantage of that, you need to have a model which is really, which exposes the right interfaces,
right.
which implements the right interfaces. And this is why you often need a view model on top of your model.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a story. And this is really very interesting. We spent, like, I'm part of a WPF mailing list. It's actually a Google group, so it's public. The discussions
oh, okay.
are public. Not everyone can send messages, but at least everyone can see them. So it's quite interesting. It's WPF Disciples.
Okay.
Do I say that correctly in English?
Disciples. Yeah.
So everybody can go there and read what we talk about. We are sometimes a little bit goofing around, but lots of discussion are really about this kind of model and how can we improve the model, and that's a very interesting story.
So what do you say to developers who look at WPF and say, you know, I don't really need flashing, spinning, you know, buttons and text boxes?
Yeah.
Like, why do we... That's just silly stuff. Like... that's a reaction I've heard to the introduction of WPF into Visual Studio, that part of the Visual Studio design surface is going to be using WPF. And immediately people said, great, I need a lot of bloat for, you know, are you going to make my cursor bounce up and down?
Yeah, I read that a lot. And I mean, obviously, those, you know, the problem is that WPF has been sold a lot as, okay, the flashy bling bling stuff, right? And a lot of demo applications were taking advantage of that, like putting 3D everywhere. And so it's kind of a shame, because it's really so much more than that, right? So the way I see it is, I mean, people ask me a lot, should I go WinForms or should I go WPF for my new application? In my opinion, the only reason, and interestingly, Charles Petzold gave at the pre-conference, he gave a lecture, like a 6 hours long lecture about WPF. And I went there, it was really cool. You know, Charles Petzold is a great presenter, so if you have the occasion to see him talk, he's really nice. And I mean, he's the MFC guy.
Right, exactly.
And he did also quite a lot of WinForms after that, and he said that in his opinion, the only reason why somebody wants to do WinForms nowadays, or should do WinForms nowadays, is because .NET 3.0 is not available on every computer, on every PC. Right? So maybe if that's really a concern, then you should possibly go WinForms. If not, you should do WPF. So that's Charles Petzold's words.
Right.
So that's one start. So yeah, another reason that I mention sometimes, when which is a reason for using WinForms instead of WPF, right, is that is the skills of the team. So sometimes you have a team which never did any WPF at all, and who is, you know, who doesn't have time to learn it or doesn't have the possibility to learn it for some reason.
It's not the kind of thing where you can just say new WPF application and start clicking around. I mean,
that's correct. It's really, you have, I mean, the learning curve is quite steep.
Yeah.
If you, I think it's worth going through that, because it's a fascinating new platform and new possibilities. It's definitely the future. So, I mean, I was talking with a guy at Microsoft who told me, yeah, they won't do any update to WinForms anymore because it's perfect. And I kind of, you know, I'm not quite sure it's true, but so basically, WinForms is here to stay for sure. They are not going to, you know, like remove it from .NET, maybe not even .NET 5.0 or whatever. It's here, it stays, but it's not going to change. So don't expect any, you know, improvement in that matter. Except, of course, the improvements that they do to the whole .NET framework, which is, you know, like faster startup time and these kind of things, which come really from the CLR, not from WinForms itself. So I have respect for people who continue to want to do WinForms. I can understand that. But honestly, WPF has so many more advantages, even for just, you know, standard line of business application. It still needs some work. Microsoft is working a lot, especially in the line of business application area, to provide, for example, some possibilities to, you know, according to data, automatically generate forms. My good friend Carl Schifflet is doing amazing work about that. So he's a WPF Disciples. I was mentioning the Google rule before. He's an MVP. He was an MVP because he has been hired by Microsoft now. And he's working on the CIDR team. He's a great guy, and he's doing a lot of work in that area with also Josh Smith and other WPF experts. And he has a framework where he can, just by loading a bunch of business objects, generate you know, line of business type of forms in WPF.
Right, right.
And after that, I mean, to me, the main advantage is really that the user experience in WPF is so much better than in WinForms.
So what are the ways that the user experience is better, aside from, you know, gradients and flashing buttons?
Right. So, well, one thing which is really different is that since you have, I mean, the designer story is so much better. I think that's the main thing, that the main advantage that I see. So, and I understand, I come from a very big firm, you know, Siemens, and we have our designers, so that's an advantage. We can use them to design our application. I understand that not everybody has this setting, and I've been talking to a lot of very small firms and even one-man firms, you know, who don't have that kind of money.
Right.
And I keep telling Microsoft, you know, you have a story that you need to improve there. Like, for example, why not provide a set of predefined skins for your application so that the developer can just say, okay, I'm going to choose that skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be applied automatically to all the controls in my application.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to tweak it with a couple of properties and I won't have to use Blend.
It, you know, even like, well, exactly, tweaking with properties is great, but even the just right now people are providing skins and, you know, themes and that kind of thing via or, you know, as resources, just as, hey, here's a download on my site, you know, and something as simple as skinning a list box scroll bar in Silverlight can take, you know, you have to override, you know, you have to apply a style to the list box that pulls the style to the scroll viewer, which pulls the style to the list.
From the scroll bar.
Exactly.
And, yeah, totally.
And it's a great interview question, I think, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's not that easy, and that's why I'm a big fan of the designer story, and, you know, I mean, no surprise I'm joining Identity Mind, which is such a, you know, I'm sorry if it sounds like a plug, but I mean, I'm a big fan, and they are not the only ones. Like, Frog Designer has a great story about that too, and I mean, you work for Vertigo, so
sure.
Obviously you know that they do too. I think the designer story is going to become increasingly important in the near future, and, you know, for every kind of application, I have an anecdote, if you allow me. Some time ago, so Siemens, and especially Siemens Building Technologies, we do really industry type of applications, right? So I was talking with my boss back then and trying to tell him, you know, we should try to improve the look and feel of our application and try to bring a better user experience. And then he told me, oh, you know, our users are very traditional and they don't really need a good user experience.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to them because they are very traditional. They have been using this kind of applications for years, etc. And then I told him, you know, I think you're wrong, if I may say, because those users, even though they are traditional, they go online. They go on the web,
right?
And they see websites. And they have access to good user experience. They also have access to bad user experience because at the web, flashy, bling, bling, you know,
right.
but they do have access to good user experience where really designers spend hours on the site. And they will want this on their desktop too.
Mm-hmm.
And they start getting it at home, you know, they start getting beautiful products at home. So why should they go to work and have an ugly user experience? And, you know, it they are not going to want that.
Right.
And we noticed that it's true, actually. So that conversation was like maybe 5 years ago, something like this. And since then, we really noticed that the user experience is mattering to people more and more. So, I mean, again, you know, I totally understand the small firms who want to develop an application as fast as possible. And I think that Microsoft got it too, because we have been telling them that so often that finally, you know, I think they really get it. So we will see improvement in that area soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the next versions of WPF, etc. But on the other hand, you have really firms who can do the whole thing, who have a good design experience, and their WPF is just going to blow your mind. I mean, another anecdote I have, I have some friends at another division of Siemens where they had to basically provide an application in WinForms. And, you know, to be competitive in the market, suddenly they got a requirement, okay, well, you need to be able to style it. And they had to rewrite the scroll bar control to make it look like they wanted to, basically.
Right.
So just to get the corporate look and feel of Siemens, which we now apply to all of our applications, they had to rewrite the scroll bar. And sorry, but who wants to do that, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So nowadays,
so you're not
real,
just skinning a scroll bar,
absolutely.
You are writing your own control.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, so that's not what you want to do.
Right.
So yeah, I think it has good advantages. Also, I mean, you know, even for line of business application where the user experience is maybe a little bit less significant, and even if you don't want to provide skins for your application ever, I mean, WPF is really much more than just a UI framework, right?
Right.
It has been so, I mean, that's the thing I prefer the most about WPF is that it has been thought through by extremely intelligent people. I was mentioning John Gossman before, and you know, I'm a big fan of him. I mean, he's a highly intelligent person. And there are a lot of other WPF architects on that team that, you know, that I know, and that I spent a long time talking with them. And I think they really came with a very well architected framework. And even, you know, the lower layers of WPF are well thought through. And I mean, obviously there is room for improvement everywhere, you know, as usual, right? It's an evolution, you know, iteration, etc. But what is existing now is already very well thought through. And it's a pleasure to work with such a nice framework, basically.
I think coming from a web world, whenever I've had to work in WinForms, it's always been frustrating to me that the UI is blended in and it's a bunch of code statements saying set this property, set this property, set this property. And so it really kind of is, well, it can be frustrating to learn the new syntax of XAML. It's very nice once you start getting into it to have your design clearly separated out.
No, that's correct. I mean, there are people who love XAML, and I'm one. I fell in love with XAML the first day I typed it, and it was in Visual Studio 2005, where the editor was basically just an XML editor.
Right.
And, you know, I'm in the process of redesigning my website completely because it looks really ugly in the moment, so I'm just doing, you know, putting everything apart and retyping it.
Yeah.
And it was so painful to go back to typing HTML because the editor is not as good as the XAML editor. By far, you know, the IntelliSense sucks in ASP.NET, the HTML editor, and you know, even simple things like format your document will pretty much mess up everything. XAML is just beautiful, you know. You press Control K, Control D, it will, you know, like follow the rules that you set in the
option. I mean, partly because it's well formed XML, right?
Exactly. So you have no exception to the real XML, so you can parse it very easily. Today we saw the new XAML, XAML 4 this morning. Rob Relia and Daniel, I think Ross, were showing that. Because the story here is that XAML is used in a number of platforms. For the moment, I think only 4, that's WPF, Silverlight, XPS, so the paper specification, and workflow and WCF. So workflow and WCF use the same flavor of XAML. WPF uses a different one, etc. So there are 4 flavors of XAML in the moment, and they want to unify that. And what they showed us this morning was really pretty cool. Like, you know, running a workflow type of XAML inside the WPF application. So basically, Daniel Ross did a stock option lookup application, you know, an advice application, buy or sell, without writing one single line of C#. So he was all in XAML. And that was pretty cool, actually. It was really nice to see. So, I mean, even though it opens the door to monsters, right? But still, I mean, you know, to have the possibility to do it is kind of attractive. And they were showing their new object, which is called XAML XML Reader and XAML XML Writer. And there is, so you can read the XAML file, feed that to an object reader or object writer, and then get access to the whole tree directly in code, so that you can after that, you know, do a graphic representation of your XAML documents, this kind of thing. Or, of course, debug your XAML, which is very attractive because at the moment the story is not that good. So, yeah, what's coming to us is really cool. And Rob was mentioning that writing parsers will, you know, not be that difficult because what you get is basically well-formed XML, really. Mm-hmm. And I was talking yesterday with somebody who is doing a tool. I think you saw the tool too, this tool where you can enter some expressions.
Yes.
And I don't remember the firm who does this.
Ajourno is the name of the...
I think so. Those guys are in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And pretty cool tool. But I was at the underground party yesterday and talked with the guy who was making that demo. And then he told me that, you know, the biggest problem they have is that they have to understand also bad HTML.
Right.
So, because it's an HTML cleaner kind of application where you can run your bad HTML through that and then get nice HTML eventually. So, they have to understand so many variations of the language that it's kind of, you know, of killing, I guess. But if you do that in XAML, it's easier because at least it's well-formed.
Right.
If you want to extend your XAML, you can, but you have to do it in an XML kind of way, add your namespace, etc.
Right.
So, yeah, it's pretty nice, really. I'm a big XAML fan.
So you mentioned earlier, in talking about the differences in WPF and Silverlight,
right. The
visual state manager.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could talk about that, like
how
that affects your...
Right. So the story here is that WPF started by... offering to the designers a way to create multiple states of a control. Like, let's say you have a button, and then you say, okay, when my mouse is over the button, I want it to look differently, right? So in WPF, you have so-called triggers. So you have a style. You say, okay, I apply a style to a button. And then I have a trigger which says when the property is mouse over is true, I want another style to be applied. Or I want other properties to be set differently,
mm-hmm.
let's say.
You call your setters and all that.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So that's the story of WPF triggers. And that was cool, but it's apparently very complicated to implement. So in Silverlight, they didn't manage to do it. They didn't have time, basically, to do it for Silverlight 2. So what they did instead was provide another model, which is called Visual State Manager. And the Visual State Manager, instead of saying, okay, when something happens, I want, for example, an animation, because that's the whole story, basically. If you want to animate
mm-hmm.
this transition, like, for example, you want, you know, in Vista, you often have that when you have two windows changing, right? You have a kind of nice fade-in, fade-out
right.
effect. So that's an animation, basically.
Yeah.
So if you want to do that in triggers, you have to create a storyboard, and then you have to say very precisely, I want this to happen over this period of time, etc. With the Visual State Manager in Silverlight, you don't need to do that. You say, that's my start state, that's
mm-hmm.
my end state, and I want the transition to last 0.5 seconds, and the Visual State Manager takes care of the rest for you, basically.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. But designers sometimes dislike it because they have less control over what happens precisely. So now the story is that Visual State Manager is not compatible with triggers. Triggers, so you cannot... use, you know, out-of-the-box Visual State Manager in WPF, and you cannot use triggers in Silverlight. So there is an incompatibility story here. So to solve that, what they do is that they just released a Visual State Manager for WPF. So that's something that you can add to WPF to extend it, and you will get the same type of manager in WPF. I just read on Twitter before that you can even set a registry key for Blend to have to use the same Visual State Manager that Silverlight is using, but for WPF. So the tooling is also going in that direction. And the next step will be to add triggers to Silverlight, which, again, I heard was going to come, but they don't say when, so we are not sure. It's apparently really quite difficult. So yeah, that's one major difference when you want to style your application. So my recommendation in the moment would rather be, if you want to have a compatible application, would rather to be, forget the triggers for the moment, go with Visual State Manager, do that in Silverlight first. When you get it in Silverlight, transfer that to your WPF application, which should be quite easy with this new Visual State Manager kind of add-on to,
mm-hmm.
to WPF. I was doing the air quote. But
right.
So it's a kind of add-on, so it's basically a new assembly that you need to add and add your references, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get exactly the same behavior in both worlds. So that's a nice scenario, actually.
I found that for having done Silverlight since, you know, 1.0 and on up, that Visual State Manager for, you know, the huge majority of applications is so much easier than going through and trying to respond to events and you know, because you define a state of, you know, button, you know, hover, button, you know, selected, button, you know, the normal state, and then you don't have to worry about going through each of those different transitions. So,
totally,
you know, you don't have to say, okay, I stopped hovering and now I'm in a normal state. Okay, I went from hover to selected. So, you know what I mean? And all.
No, it's a very clean model. It's, I mean, you know, I when it came out, I was really, you know, following who is saying what about that. And honestly, the people that I saw who disliked it were really the best WPF experts in the world. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, people like, you know, Jonathan Russ and Nathan Dunlop. So Nathan is a designer at Identity Mine, and he knows WPF from inside. And Jonathan, exactly the same. He was on the WPF team. He works for Identity Mine now. He knows the thing inside out. So for them, it's just as natural as French for me, you know?
Right.
They just know it natively, right? And so those guys were not too happy about Visual State Manager and about not having triggers in Silverlight.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, they are really experts. And then you had people who were really liking it and who said, okay, we need that into WPF, and now we do. So I think the story here is quite nice. I also think that the Visual State Manager is really easier to use, but I can also understand that it's a little bit, you have a little bit less control over your transition. Mm. So, okay, there is a trade-off here.
Mm. What do you recommend for, like, I've heard one recommendation for getting into learning, you know, XAML-based UI development, so Silverlight and WPF, is to start with Silverlight because it's kind of a smaller, confined set. What are your thoughts on what would you recommend to somebody, a developer who's done WinForms and ASP.NET and wants to learn? Where would they start?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, to be honest, because, I mean, what you say makes sense. I can understand this way of thought that, you know, it's a smaller API, so I need less work, etc. To me, the best way to learn a new technology is really to find a project that attracts you, and I do that all the time. I have, you know, like my website is an example. I'm just in the process, as I said, to rewrite it, and I do it in ASP.NET MVC. First of all, because, you know, I like Phil Hack. And second of all, because, I mean, I think that's a cool new framework that I want to learn. Mm-hmm. So I just find a concrete project and I do it. So I'm rewriting my site in MVC mostly because of that, because I want to learn the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really recommend to just do that, basically. So if you have an idea of application, which is a standalone application, which really, you know, you have been burning to do that for a long time, I would just learn WPF with that, honestly. And if you have an idea of a, you know, cool, rich interactive application, I don't say rich internet application, I say rich interactive application. Sorry,
okay.
You know, so something that I do. But anyway, my point was, if you have a project that really that you burn to realize, I would start with that. I think the idea is that you should really have fun doing it, because it's quite tough to learn. You know, so why not, you know, learn it in a fun way, basically. And the best way is really to program something that is useful to you in a way or another. So I don't really have a recommendation to start with WPF or start with Silverlight. I think it all depends what you're aiming to. If you learn WPF first, you know, the good thing is that WPF has been out for quite some time now. So there is a lot of guidance and best practices and a lot of sample applications. And Silverlight was released like 2 weeks ago, so it's very new, you know. So I think maybe it's a little bit easier to learn WPF because there is much more experience out there. And maybe it's a little bit easier to learn Silverlight because you have less to learn. So I would really let the people choose.
Okay. So you just finished a book on Silverlight 2. So what was your experience like writing that book? Was it your first book?
Yeah, that's my first book. I've been, you know, as I said, I've been writing on my blog for quite some time. And that's actually how the editor contacted me too. So they asked me if I was interested to write about something. They didn't really set, you know, any constraints. So, and I thought that Silverlight would be a cool, you know, cool thing to write about, because, I mean, mostly because it was not even out back then when I started. So I saw that as a great way to learn the thing. And since I was already quite, you know, well versed into WPF, I thought, okay, it's nice. I mean, it's going to help me there. And I'm also, as I said, ASP.NET guy at the beginning, so, you know, it all fit well together, basically.
Right.
And I hesitated a lot if I should do it or not, mostly because of, you know, I didn't want to take too much time out of my family, etc.
Right.
I was already quite busy professionally too, but it was kind of a once in a lifetime occasion.
Sure.
So I thought, okay, what the heck, let's do it. And yeah, and I've been very happy doing it. It's hard. I had times where I sort of, you know, just giving up. The contract pretty much says what happens if you give up when you wrote like 50% or whatever. So it's, you know, I was always like calculating, okay, if I give up now, how much do I still earn? And, you know, yeah. Kind of thing. But no, I mean, retrospectively, I'm really happy that I pulled through, and it was a lot of fun writing, actually.
And it's
really
in color.
Nice.
That's nice.
Well, you know, yeah, people keep telling me that, and I keep telling them, okay, but I would like also to hear your review after
right,
you read
exactly.
it, you know? But yeah, the packaging is really nice. So
yeah.
It's, for those who know it, it's the same, exactly the same kind of packaging as WPF Unleashed that
uh-huh.
Adam Nathan did back then, you know? And the story here is that I wanted to do a book taking people by the hand from zero and, you know, leading them to learn Silverlight, basically. And the reason why I wanted to do a book like that is that back then when I was active in the JavaScript community, I saw people doing a lot of JavaScript. And, you know, for JavaScript, you need Notepad or whatever editor
right.
you prefer. And you need a web browser. So basically, you have an IDE on every machine.
Yeah.
Right? And you have alerts for debugging. So
yeah,
you don't even
exactly.
need a debugger. And then we saw beautiful things being made, and we saw ugly things being made. And the reason why ugly things were being made is that people were coming to programming from another background, and they had no idea about how do you do software engineering, how do you structure your application, how do you do objects, you know, how do you do layers, etc.
Right. Right.
And I was kind of thinking, okay, Silverlight has the same kind of story. You know, you can do it for free. The runtime is going to be available. I mean, it's already on 25% of all the machines in the world, apparently, according to what they told us. And I think, you know, it's going to go quite fast. I mean, it's going to be available on a large number of machines very fast. So the runtime is here. The tools you have, like Visual Web Dev Express was released, which is a free version of Visual Studio, of the web part of Visual Studio. And
right.
you can do Silverlight into that. So you have really a great IDE. No more alerts. You
yeah,
have really
exactly.
debugger, and you know you have a object inspector and everything for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of people will come to .NET through Silverlight, you know. And I wanted to give them a book which explains them how you should do things in a correct way. And it's it's really some chapters will be a little bit. I think I'm talking really honestly here. A little bit boring for people with .NET experience
uh-huh.
because I'm explaining the history of .NET and where it came from and why and, you know, what is an object and
yeah.
things like that. And so people are encouraged to, you know, either skip through those chapters or just reread them to refresh their memory and then after that move on. But on the other hand, other people, and I had always in mind that, you know, people active in the Flash development world will probably want to try Silverlight because, you know, it's a nice complement. I see that as
uh-huh.
really a complementary technology. And they need guidance, basically. So I think that was really my idea when I wrote the book. And I think it came out well. So talking with the editor, we thought, okay, we have really good material. We should do that into an Unleashed. And this is what we did. And yeah, it sold well. I'm happy. I got good comments so far. I'm looking forward to read reviews from people who don't know me, so they don't have to, you know, to be nice. So yeah,
I think that, you know, like you pointed out, that there's introductory material, but from the time I've spent looking at the book, it's not at all just an. I mean, it's a very comprehensive book. You go into depth. Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to do that. I tried to cover really. I mean, in the last chapters of the book, we do, you know, pretty complicated stuff like, you know, placing a call into through a REST API to Flickr and getting JSON back and doing some link queue to JSON to get .NET objects back. So there are a couple of pretty cool things, I think. I think you can compare that to the learning curve in WPF. You start from zero and then you have a steep learning curve.
Right.
My book is a little bit about that. The learning curve is quite steep, but I really try to accompany people. And there are huge chunks of code. We make really concrete applications. There is one application that I pull through the book. So we start, I think, in chapter 5 with some basic thumbnails, display kind of things like videos and images.
Uh-huh.
And then it ends up by, you know, as I said, pulling pictures from Flickr and showing them with keywords and things like that. So it's a nice application that goes through the book that you can do, and there are a whole lot of other samples. The samples, you can download them if you want, so they are on my site, and My site is galasoft.ch. I don't think I said that. So galasoft.ch.
Great.
And the whole book material is on there. Or also, there is, of course, a Inform IT, you know, site for the book. So the address is on the cover of the book. You can find it. So you can download everything. You can play with that. All the samples are applications that you can run directly. So you can just, you know, double-click on the SLN file. The applications, the code was made for Visual Studio 2008 because back then the DevExpress wasn't out yet. So I did that. But you can easily just import the code into DevExpress and run it too, and it works. So yeah, I tried to do that, and we have a lot of illustrations, which are always nice, especially because they are in color.
Right.
And, you know, how do you do a linear gradient brush in black and white?
Exactly. It's hard,
right?
Yeah.
So when you have it in color, it's nicer. So yeah, I'm pretty happy about that. And, you know, we sold out at PDC, actually. We don't have any books to take back home. So yeah, I'm quite excited about it. Yeah.
Great. Well, I think that's all the time we have. So
okay.
Thank you very much for...
Well, thank you for hearing me.
Yep. All right.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.